This December, the Brothers Murph Battle Royale Christmas Edition is going to be filling yo stockings. 8 movies, head to head. Only one can come out on top. The most Christmassy movie of all Christmas with Christmas stuff.
Coming Thursday, December 1st. Christmas is coming.
You can't laugh right afterward.
Nah, it's fine. Yeah, just listen to the podcast.
That was so good. He goes, coming.
Welcome to the Brothers Murph Get Smart. This is a weekly podcast where two brothers, namely myself, Nick Murphy, and
Michael Lee Murphy,
work to be more knowledgeable about this big, beautiful earth that we live on and then everything inside of it. And so today joining us from Washington, D.C. is
Dylan White.
And Dylan today is going to be our resident expert.
Yeah.
And he's going to be the expert on The Song of Roland.
So before we get into it, I just want to know, what the hell is that?
What's The Song of Roland? This is something that he specifically brought up, that he wanted to host one on The Song of Roland. So you really were the driving force of this. It's not like we were interested and be like, why do you, Dylan, do you know anything about this? It's like you were like, I want to do this one. Yeah. So take us away. What the hell is that?
So, The Song of Roland is one of my favorite poems of medieval literature. It's around 1,000 years old now, but it's about this really chaotic, terrible battle that happened that really nobody came out well in. And
so, real quick, I just want to, before you get into it, there is a trend we're seeing with Dylan. He likes things that are 1,000 years old.
True.
Yes.
And that include chaos and mayhem.
Oh yeah.
And everything bad happening. So I'm just so excited. They're always very interesting. So I just wanted people to know that we're probably going to encounter this a lot.
That's fine.
Which is great. So go ahead and continue, Dylan.
So
what happens?
Yeah, well, you should basically, I think that this is maybe the bloodiest poem I've ever read. You should kind of
Hold on. Where the sidewalk ends is a bloodbath.
Yeah.
Because that sidewalk ends and all those children fall off the end of it on the bottom of that little cliff.
Yeah.
Blood and guts everywhere. Shel Silverstein is a deviant.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I don't appreciate it.
That's why he was blacklisted, I think. I don't know. Go ahead, Dylan. Sorry. So this is the bloodiest poem that you know of.
Hold on. Was Shel Silverstein really blacklisted?
No. But he should have been. We all know. Light in the attic. That's a metaphor or something. No one can decipher his poems. They're too deep.
Okay.
They're so simple, they're actually deep. Sorry, go ahead, sir. Don't mind us.
Well, you should basically think of this poem as the old medieval French version of Black Hawk Down, or so.
Sweet.
The entire thing is basically just one continuous battle over on... You know how, like, the Iliad has, like, different scenes, and there's, like, some, like... There's some parts of it where it's just, like, no, there's some love, there's some, like... Parts like that. Roland is literally just every single stanza is someone else just got horrifically killed.
So is this like the Michael Bay of like epic poems where it's just like, forget any of this story, just stuff blowing up, people dying all day.
Basically, yeah. I mean, cool. There is, and we'll get into this, but there is a true tragic humanity to the characters at the center of it. Particularly the best friends of Roland and Oliver, who we will get into. But
awesome.
Basically what you need to know is that it's about a historical battle. It's the Battle of Roncesvalles. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Which occurred...
Sounds good.
It occurred in Spain in 1778, and it's considered to be Charlemagne's greatest defeat.
Wait, hold on. This poem's 1,000 years old? 1778?
Sorry, 778. Yeah.
I was just like, this is right when America was founded, sir. Okay, cool. That makes more sense.
Yeah.
Continue.
Yeah, okay.
I was like, hold on, am I just really bad at math? Or am I okay? Cool.
No. Good catch there. 778. What basically happened, we think, was Charlemagne's army had just invaded Spain, and as they were leaving, they were ambushed. By all the Saracens who thought, you know what, we don't really like Charlemagne like coming in and killing all of us. So that's basically the setup. Roland and Oliver were two counts in Charlemagne's entourage. Actually, Roland, I believe, was Charlemagne's cousin or nephew. But anyway, they formed the rear guard, and they ended up dying. You know, that's basically the historic. That's basically the history behind this poem. But the poem dramatizes this in a very brilliant way. So the story, as we begin with the poem, it begins with Charlemagne is leaving Spain, and there's King Marsil of Saragossa, who, oh, by the way, this poem gets a lot of things about Muslims incorrect. I very much wonder if the poet writing this had any idea as to what Islam actually was, because it seems like he thinks that they all worship Apollo at a point.
Interesting.
Anyway,
okay.
King Marsil Apollo, of Saragossa has basically had it with Charlemagne, but he's too weak to do anything about that. And Charlemagne's great advisor is called Galien, and Galien really hates Roland for whatever reason. The poem actually doesn't elaborate too much on the reasons why he hates Roland, but he's hated Roland for a while. And Galien basically tells King Marsil that when Charlemagne leaves, accept the peace terms, and then take your army and destroy Charlemagne's rear guard. And the rear guard is the rear guard where Roland and Oliver are protecting. So what basically happens is exactly that. The Saracens all come out and attack the rear guard. And there's a massive argument between Roland and his friend Oliver, because Roland has this horn called the olifant. And it's called an olifant because olifant was an old French term for elephant, and the horn is made of ivory.
Right. Mm.
Anyway, Roland believes that it's wrong to blow the horn so that Charlemagne can hear and he'll send reinforcements, because this is to him a cowardly act. If the rear guard can protect the army, then they should protect the army and be willing to die for it.
Mm.
And that's kind of the decision that screws everyone up. There's this huge argument over Roland blowing the horn, and as the battle progresses, it really seems like, yeah, maybe you should have blown the horn there to, you know, alert the reinforcements and everything. But before we get into that, I'd like to read to you a section of the poem just so you can see just how bloody this battle actually is.
You got it.
Yeah. So, this is one of the Saracens going to attack Roland. Grandenin was a valiant and worthy man, a strong and courageous fighter. He encountered Roland in his path. Without having seen him, he recognized him well. From fierce countenance and his noble body, his gaze and his whole bearing, he cannot help but take fright. He tries to flee, but it is to no avail. Count Roland strikes him with such power that he splits his entire helmet down to the nasal and slices through his nose, his mouth, and his teeth. Through his entire body and his armor of Algerian mail, the two silver bows of his golden saddle and deep into the horse's back. Giving them no chance of recovery, he slew them, and all the men of Spain proclaimed in their great grief, "The Franks say our protector is striking well."
Damn. I like that at the end of that long description of just how powerful a blow he delivered. It's like, yeah, basically leaving him no chance of recovery. He's like, I'm like, the chance of recovery ended way above getting like, into the horse's back.
If you split him down to the sternum, you get some sweet band-aids.
That's like a 50-50 shot.
A couple miles of gauze, he'd be fine. Like, really.
Right.
Damn, yeah, that was, like, at first, like, halfway through the thing, I'm like, this is weak, and then you just, like, split through the helmet, through the nasal, through his teeth, cut his molars teeth in half, then through his horse, and you're like, damn.
Yeah.
He's a strong dude. So, okay, I just want to rewind for 2 seconds. So, basically, everything fell apart because one of these dudes is like, don't you blow that horn, bro. That's a cowardly act, dude. I don't like that horn. Don't you blow into that thing, and everyone dies?
Well, basically, yeah. So, Oliver,
some of the Dark Ages happened, man. Just bad decisions.
So, Oliver,
and this,
yeah. No, go
and
ahead,
this
man.
Horn, is this like, what kind of horn is it? Like, is it that loud, or is it kind of like the Horn of Gondor, where if like no matter where it's blown, men of Gondor will hear it, kind of thing?
So it is kind of both, I would say.
Okay,
like there's nothing mystical about this horn at all, but it's just curious. Really, really powerful horn.
Okay,
there, and it rings, and if blown, echoes into the mountains, essentially.
Okay, that's fair.
So anyway, this fight is going on a lot, and King Marsil ends up getting his arm cut off, and his entire...
Hey man, people splitting horses, an arm is like nothing, let's be honest.
It's basically a flesh wound right there.
And Roland and Oliver also do a great job of killing the King Marsil's, all of his children. Basically all of his young boys who are fighting their first battle and everything. He's left with no other heirs at all. And by the way, that is not the only time in this poem that someone cuts a man and his horse in half. Like that happens fairly often in this poem.
That's just standard kill technique.
Exactly.
Just jump as high as you can and come down battle axe style.
Yeah.
I saw at the end of Blade 2, that shit was tight. That's a dude in half lengthwise.
Yeah. So
I'm sorry, it's just a crazy image. Just
Oh yeah.
The dude and then the horse.
Like, what'd that horse do, man?
Guilty by association. Shouldn't have been letting that dude ride him. You die.
So the battle goes on. Oh, and by the way, I haven't even mentioned the fact that there is this really badass archbishop who's fighting with them as well. His name is Archbishop Turpin, and he's just like kind of the steady guy throughout all of this who keeps his cool the entire time, and he's like singing prayers and like giving fallen warriors their last rites as he continues swinging his sword and stuff.
It's like a movie.
Yeah, it's real.
Yeah.
I want to see that scene, just like, unto the Lord, boom! And just like doing that and just blessing people while damning others.
That's pretty rad.
Exactly.
Oh, awesome.
It's like Liam Neeson in Gang of New York.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just the priest out there.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
And of course, the smartest guy in the room.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So jackass is in the back talking about a horn. He's just like, hey, the horn type is over. We just need to be killing now.
Yeah, it's very clear as well that Archbishop Turpin... early on, Roland and Oliver are still fighting to survive and like kind of believing that they could get out of this. And Archbishop Turpin seems from the very beginning to be like, "Nah, we're fucked. Let's go down.
Time to start splitting horses in half, man. Just start killing all the horses, guys.
Exactly.
In fact, don't even kill the people. Just kill all the horses. We're taking those beasts with us. It's like, all right.
So
end game, baby."
So yeah, you know, he's doing his whole thing. Roland, the Franks, everyone who's fighting with Roland is dying, and there finally gets to a point where Oliver is pretty. They're all pretty beaten up, but Oliver is really beaten up. And this is a point where Roland finally starts thinking, maybe I should blow the horn so that Charlemagne can come with his army and everything. And
maybe.
Oliver is basically like, now is a good time, man. Like, where was this idea, you know, at the beginning of the battle? Or, you know,
seriously,
when we saw them coming. And then Roland and Oliver almost get into a fight on the battlefield themselves over, over the horn, because now Roland wants to blow the horn, and Oliver, who's near death, is like, no, we're dying, and we're going to be martyrs. And this is what's going to happen.
That's dope.
And then Arch Turpin kind of breaks them up, and is like, hey, bros, so the enemy's out there. Let's not turn against each other here. And
I just think it's funny that's like, you better not blow that horn. You blow the horn. You like your horse? Because that horse is going to be two horses in a moment. You blow that damn horn.
Don't you blow that horn, dude. We ain't cowards, man. We're bros. rose to the end, and then like 1,000 guys are dead and rolling. It's just like, hey, Oliver, man, what do you think, bud? maybe below that horn? Oliver's like, are you serious? Are you serious? Only have one testicle left. You talking about blowing a horn right now? I'm near death. Archbishop is like, hey, guys, chill. We're going to die. Yep. You're right. Oliver's right. We're going to die for sure. But, you know, like, just kill those guys instead of each other first. Do they make it?
Well, Archbishop Turpin does say, after he breaks up the fight, he says, but you probably should blow the horn. And
Oliver's like, boom! Roland's like, okay, hold on.
So Roland blows the horn, and it describes, like, he blows the horn with such force that it ruptures his temple, and blood starts streaking down his face. And the horn, the sound of the horn resounds in the mountains, and Charlemagne hears this horn and realizes Roland is under attack. And that's when, Ganlion, you know, the traitor I told you about, says, nah, he's cool. He's probably just doing that, you know, for fun and stuff. And that's when
you gotta clear the dust from the old horn once in a while. It's fine. Everything's good.
Exactly. And that's when Charlemagne realizes, and everyone realizes, that Ganlion has betrayed Roland, and they tie him up, basically. Anyway, Charlemagne turns his army around, and they start marching to catch up to Roland. But at this point, the fight is nearly over. Like, they are holding back, and actually, Roland and Oliver are defeating the Saracens that are attacking them, doing it by basically knowing that they're not going to make it out of this. And there's a point where Oliver is so bloody and broken and worn down that he can't even see anymore. And he's just swinging his sword wildly and actually hits Roland's helmet, and the sword goes through and breaks Roland's skull.
Okay,
dang.
Does armor in this story do anything? Is it tissue?
Yeah, it sharpens the sword on
the
way
down. It cut through his Algerian mail. I'm like, okay. I'm guessing the Algerians make good mail. He's like, oh, it hit his helmet and then went through it and hit his skull. I'm like, what does this armor do?
I mean, that could have been more of a bludgeoning thing. It says it broke his skull, so maybe just hit him super hard. The helmet held, but just cracked that skull.
Right. I mean, the armor does seem to do something, but I don't know. I think that you're swinging like iron swords around and stuff. Like, that armor is going to break from time to time. Yeah. I mean,
Roland didn't want to spend a lot. So he's like, my mail's made of mud.
Exactly.
I've got clay mail. It's like, that did not pan out.
To go with my claymore.
That part's made of metal, though. I'm not an idiot.
You think I am an idiot?
I'm an economist. Well, I save money. Okay, so Oliver is blindly swinging, just going down. He's seeing red.
Yeah.
And cracks Roland over the head bad.
Roland over the head bad. and breaks into his skull, and Roland then like hugs Oliver to stop him from swinging, and basically says, Oliver, do you realize it's me you're attacking? Not stop attacking me, but just, he needs to know if Oliver is doing this purposefully or not.
Right.
If he just destroyed in his final moments that one true friendship that he's had his entire life. And then Oliver says, no, I didn't realize it was you. I'm blind right now. I'm broken. The fog has taken over me. And Oliver essentially lays down and dies. And
so, wow. Okay, yeah. So he finally kind of ran out of gas.
Right, exactly.
I thought he was going to look up. He's like, you should have blown that horn. And then just stab.
So there are other later versions of this poem in which Oliver does try to take out Roland sort of vengeance. But in the original poem, that's not the case at all.
Okay.
I think it's because later authors started having a real problem with the fact that Roland didn't blow the horn. But early on, no, It was perfectly fine. It was a respectable, heroic thing for him to do. Anyway, Oliver is dead. And basically, it gets to a point where it's literally just Roland still on his horse and Archbishop Turpin just standing on the ground, swinging his weapon, blessing all the men who have died, and the remnants of the Saracen army are fleeing away from them. And Roland then finds a rock underneath the shade of a tree and lays down there to die. He's at this point bludgeoned. His skull is cracked open. He's shot full of arrows and spears.
Jeez. And blew out that temple hitting that high C on the old horn.
Exactly. And then as he's laying down to die, this robber comes over and sees this weak, broken count, and attempts to steal his horn from him.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. And Roland, with his last ounce of strength, bashes that guy's head open with the horn, splitting the horn in two.
Oh.
Anyway, Roland lays down to die, and that's when Charlemagne comes, finally. And Charlemagne is distraught and angry and upset, and he finds Roland's body and kind of gives it this sort of burial.
Okay.
Well, actually, he just scoops the body up and puts it in a coffin to take it to his castle to bury him.
Right. Right.
But then he starts pursuing the Saracens with a vengeance. And King Marcel is now, he's armless, he's lost everyone, he's about to die. But there's this new emir who shows up from Babylon with reinforcements. And Charlemagne then has to have a big battle then with this emir. This battle is basically the same as the other battle. Like, it's a lot of people dying, it's a lot of horses getting cut in half. Lots of skulls being bashed in, but Charlemagne ends up winning this battle, and then they win, and then they go home. And once they're home, Charlemagne says, "You know, we have to deal with this Galion guy,
right?
Who kind of is responsible for all this shit." And they have. They have a trial by combat to see if he's innocent. And Charlemagne's knight kills Ganelon's knight. And that's how they know that he's guilty. And then they tie his limbs to horses and make them gallop in opposite directions so that he's ripped apart.
Damn.
Yeah.
And then they split all the horses in half.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just to complete the math. Oh my
exactly.
God.
Exactly.
So he eventually gets his.
He gets
I just
his.
Love the
strong
idea of.
Quartered.
Yeah.
It's like, I know how to sell this, guys. All right. No one was there. No one knows what really happened. Basically, if you're innocent, your knight's just going to fight. Dope.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's like the
obviously.
Old witch trials where. What was it? Witches, if
you don't burn.
No. When they used to throw them. Yeah, exactly.
If you do burn, you're like, well, shit. Well,
guess I was wrong.
Yeah, I guess.
If you float, that means you're a witch.
That's what it was. Yeah, if you float, if you're a witch. If you drown, then you weren't a witch. Oh, yeah, either way, yeah. You're dead.
Basically.
So.
There was another witch trial where they'd make you hold a hot coal, and if the coal burned you, then you were a witch. Or you weren't a witch. I think if the cult burned you, you were a witch. Which I'm like...
Still a lose-lose, yeah.
Seems extremely fair.
Yeah.
You know, all of these things. And I guess, if you're Galleon, you're this traitor, you want that trial by combat. He's just like, dude, my guy, have you seen his thighs? He's super strong.
Oh, yeah.
I'm super innocent, you guys. And it didn't work out. They got split into, four or five pieces by horses. That's nuts. That's crazy. poor Roland. It's funny, by the end of it, I'm just like, damn, because it's like such a noble, heroic moment right at the end. But you're like, dude, this is your fault.
Oh, yeah.
You got this coming to you.
Yeah.
You killed so many people.
So it's interesting because I always thought this as well. And last year I was on the rooftop in Greece and struck up a conversation with this woman who was a French classics PhD candidate, and we started talking about Song of Roland. And she was the one who told me that basically, if you look at this from the medieval perspective, Roland does nothing wrong. Like, he is completely right. honorable in every single mm-hmm. way, because that's what was expected from a knight. I mean, he's dumb, but, you know, it's morally, he did nothing wrong.
Yeah, like you say, he's not a coward. I guess exactly. That's all that matters. The end of the day is you die in an honorable way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I guess looking back and with that mindset, that was like the best possible way to go. You know, the best life to live would be to, you know, live by the sword, die by the sword or whatever.
Yeah.
Go down.
I mean, there's definitely a logic to that medieval perspective of, look, we're going to die anyway, so might as well die heroically.
Yeah, might as well make a headline of it.
Exactly.
Get put into a song or two.
Yep.
Yeah. Might as well make some sweet horse jerky before. But it's so funny because, you know, we don't live in that time. And I mean, there are some people that I'm sure would hang on to that kind of mindset and would think to die nobly would be a good death indeed. But just looking back, it's like, dude, just blow the horn. There's people there. Yeah. That horn serves a purpose. Why do you think they gave it to you? Just like, here's this ornate horn. It's decoration only. Don't blow into it. You can play the Saints Go Marching in if you want.
Unless you want to lose a temple, don't you dare blow this horn.
Don't you go for it, dude. Your temple can't handle it. You know? I just like they blew out his temple blowing so hard into
it. It's like
right
before he blows it, Oliver like pops him, like puts a potato in it. So like jams it. You know, like.
And they just shot that potato. Just blows. I was just like, I don't know, guys. I feel really dizzy, but I feel really great after that.
His blood just coursing down his face.
Let's get ready to battle. I feel really great.
That note was really clear, don't you think? Roland, look at your face. Why? I feel great.
He's like, I still hear it ringing. I still hear it. Pure as day. And they're like, that horn still has a potato. It never even blew. He just hears like... When that guy comes upon him in his death, he's still trying to blow it. Just like, damn thing.
Finally gets it unlodged. Like the last guy he's trying to rob him. He's like, the potato just kills the dude.
Goes into this.
Goes through his Algerian armor straight into his temple.
This is why we need this podcast, because Dylan does 20 minutes of like great storytelling and like just derail it with a potato. It's the first potato gun. He goes boom, ping, and then just like the most beautiful note rings out. Charlemagne's like, damn, Roland's dead. Damn it. I'm gonna kill the hell out of the other army now.
I know that sounded. I'll put a potato in that thing again.
Classic. Those guys are hilarious, man. Rear guard, just a hoot.
Oh yeah.
Well, that's a good story, man.
Yeah.
So is this, you were saying that they've rewritten this story over the years or retold it. Is this something that's kind of been retold through time and time again?
Very much so. So, Roland, another fun fact about this poem, this is our oldest poem in the French language that we have.
Oh, wow.
So it's kind of like the French version of Beowulf.
Cool. There.
And because of that, it's been so monumentally influential in terms of sort of, this is the sort of poem that would be sung at medieval courts. There is a Italian poem about this story as well called Orlando Furioso.
And it's an epic, right? It's a long one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I thought.
Yeah. I mean, it reads really quickly. I recommend that anyone who really likes battle stories checks out this poem.
Sure. We'll definitely put a link to the show notes of a, you know, way to get it on Audible or Kindle or Amazon, just so that if you would like to read through the whole thing, you can.
Oh, yeah.
The whole bloody tale.
The whole bloody tale of Roland. But then it also it also has very much influenced modern pop culture as well. There's a specific character that came around in the last century who is very much based off of Roland, and particularly based off of Roland's death. And I'm talking right now about Boromir.
Hell yeah, you are.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, you are. It was an Oliphant, and then he's like blowing a horn. I was just like,
That's why I brought the Horn of Gondor. I was like, are you talking about the Horn of Gondor right now, guys?
We are. And that's why.
Are you talking about this dude going down Hella Noble like Boromir?
That's why I didn't say no, because we are literally talking about the Horn of Gondor.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
So this is one of those moments where it's so interesting reading Lord of the Rings, because there's so many moments that are so unique to Tolkien, and other things where he just literally rips it from another poem. And this is one of those instances
A friend of mine and I were having this conversation. I can't remember what it is, but it's something out of Plato's Republic that they think that Tolkien took a lot of like the mythic of the ring, like the great ring of power and stuff like that. They think that he borrowed heavily from that. And I'm like, yeah, of course he did. Like he borrowed heavily from a lot of mythology kind of all over the place.
Right. And that's something that good authors do is they borrow from the best stuff, and he chose the best stuff. And guess what? Now everyone borrows from him. Yeah. It's, you know, Tolkien was not the first to do it. He will not be the last.
Yeah.
And it's great, you know.
And I get it. I mean, what an epic story. Especially with the horn and just how symbolic that is and just how powerful of an image that is. It's like, talk about, you know, a tragic hero whose pride is really his downfall.
Right.
You know, with Boromir, it's like, you know, it's like his pride and you know, his desire to help his country and stuff is what brings him down. And Roland's kind of like, we're not blowing that horn. No, we don't need it. We're good. You know, and it's just like, it's such it's you know, it's the same thing. It's just awesome. I love
it. But you have that redemption factor in which, you know, Roland does realize that, you know, he was probably wrong, or at the very least, at least understands the importance of the horn, and especially the moment with Oliver right there at the end, where he had to stop himself, and just, he had to know whether or not he ruined this friendship, and then find out that, you know, that, at least this version, that no, he was just blind with rage and bleeding out. And then he dies in, especially the way Stuck Full of Arrows, man. Oh God.
Sitting up against a tree.
Best part of that whole freaking series of books, Boromir. Oh, I love that. Sorry. You know what? I'm gonna put a link to the show notes in, for Fellowship of the Ring, Boromir's death, because that is my favorite part of all three of those movies. It is so good.
Yeah, it's exceptionally well
done. So I'm going to find it on YouTube and post it for y'all.
So heartbreaking. Yeah.
Oh my God. Sean Bean for life. Well, dang. Okay. That's the Song of Roland. That's so cool, Dylan. You know, he kind of said going in, this is going to be kind of an experiment. We did not know much about what we are getting into.
Well, the second he had us listen to this, like this really cool, like Norwegian, song that's about the Song of Roland. And it says like Oliphant a lot. I was like,
I wonder.
All right. Well, I have a feeling it's going to have some Lord of the Rings ties. Cause if any of the viewers don't know, all three of us, are huge Lord of the Rings fanatics. And so, anything Lord of the Rings, we're always very, very happy to hear
anything
about.
That helps shed light on, you know, how this story was made or where Tolkien got his ideas is fascinating, endlessly fascinating. We'll put a link to that song, by the way, because that thing is a jam.
Yeah, it's freaking.
Thank you for sending us that. As a Norwegian, just gets you feeling like a Viking and stuff. Very nice.
You know, on the subject of Tolkien as well, a little bit away from Roland, but I was listening to a lecture recently on old Anglo-Saxon poetry, and the lecturer came out with this sort of poem. She's like, and of course, the most famous Anglo-Saxon poem, and she starts reciting it, and it literally goes, where is the horse and the rider? Where is the horn that was blowing? And I was like, this sounds incredibly familiar to me. And this sounds like we're about to like storm Helm's Deep right here.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Damn, it's great. And I also wonder now, having read the Dark Tower series, if Stephen King is referencing Roland, because the main character is this cowboy.
I was like, there's a big fantasy character named Roland. I couldn't remember who the hell it was. That's where it was.
Right. He's kind of the last gunslinger. And this old knight or whatever. And I'm just curious if it's just like a tip of the cap to that. I wouldn't be surprised.
I wouldn't be surprised at all. In fact, I don't really know the Dark Tower series that well, but I'd be, actually be surprised if it wasn't a tip of the hat.
Yeah,
to
absolutely. Absolutely. That's great. Wow. What an amazing, truly classic story, I guess. Like you said, very bloody, very, medieval in all ways. But fascinating. And you see that kind of story retold, or that the character trait about the prideful hero.
Yeah.
Who has an untimely death. I mean, that's told and retold in many different ways throughout all time and will continue to be told. That was awesome. So I'm curious, Dylan.
Yes.
If you have, as you know, we are fans of trivia here and we like to test our knowledge. I mean, we debunked that Lord of the Rings thing in no time. So we're curious if maybe you have a little pop quiz for us. You might be able to help us out with a couple of questions.
Yeah.
Maybe we can try to guess the answers to.
Yeah, for sure. So
pop quiz. Sorry. I get excited. Go ahead.
So number one, I would say, you know, Roland's king is Charlemagne. Can you tell me why Charlemagne was significant?
Oh dear. It's one of those things where it's like, I know the name Charlemagne, but I don't really know what Charlemagne did, in all honesty.
So why it's important specifically that he is Roland's king?
Why
that's important to the story?
Like what Charlemagne
did. Not necessarily important to the story, but what Charlemagne did. Why he himself is significant.
Oh my god. I got nothing.
Okay, I got it. Next guy. He's the first person to make cashmere socks fashionable.
Boom. He was the first person to go horizontal with a horse having. He didn't go top down, he went right to left. That's my guess. I don't think that's right.
You know, both of those Nick things may actually be right. But
okay, why else is it important?
Charlemagne was the first of the Frankish kings. He was the one who created the what's called the Carlovingian Renaissance, which was a sort of return, an attempt to return to the culture of Rome. And he was the first crowned Holy Roman Emperor.
First crowned Holy Roman Emperor, Charlemagne. Okay.
Charlemagne.
That's probably why we've heard that name. It's rattling around in our noodle somewhere.
His real name is Charles the First. But Charlemagne literally means Charles the Great.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Dope. I'm gonna name a kid Charlemagne now, Charles the Great. That's awesome. Okay, cool.
All right.
Now we know that.
Hit us with another.
Okay.
You got anything else?
Yeah. Again with Charlemagne, what do you think the likelihood is that you are related to Charlemagne?
Oh. All right, Charlemagne. Okay, let me tell you this right now. Anybody who's willing to name themselves Charlemagne, man, I'm Charles the Great. They got around. I'm going to say the likelihood that we all at some point back in time relate to this dude is like 78%.
Yeah, I was gonna go something high. I was gonna go like 60.
Okay, well, that was high. It's around 50. It's around if you're of European descent, it's around 50% chance.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's still pretty good.
So you still slayed pretty hard.
Yeah.
Well, you set it up. I was like, man, it must be something really.
I know.
Really
I was
high.
Gonna go like 98. Okay, but hey, a 50-50 shot ain't bad. Yeah. That's really interesting.
That
if you're from
your, all,
if you're Europe, of European descent,
fun
which
fact,
we all qualify for
that statistic. Also applies to Genghis Khan. If you're,
yeah,
Asian
I do know
descent.
That one.
Yeah,
yeah.
Damn, that's nuts.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
I mean, conquerors got around a lot.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
A lot of kids.
Yeah.
Think about it. Yeah. Just going to each and every. And think about it. If you're a conqueror and stuff, I think it would behoove
you're literally
you.
Spreading your genes out. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Wow. That's nuts. Okay. So 50. We got a 50% shot that we're all very distant cousins. Nick and I are still brothers and maybe really distant cousins.
True. Both.
If that checks out. I don't know. Awesome. Anything else?
Yeah. So one thing that we haven't really touched on is the fact that even though the enemy army in this poem is Muslim, the army the historical army that attacked Roland was probably more of a mix between between Muslims and Muslims and Christians in Spain, and actually was probably predominantly more Christian than it was Muslim. So my final question is: there is a hero of Spain around this time as well, or maybe a little bit after, who has also been probably as famous, as important as Roland has in terms of medieval legacy and even coming up to today, someone who was thought of as a unifier between the Muslims and the Christians in Spain. Do you know who this man is, or even what his ceremonial title was?
Oh, God. Casey would probably kill this.
Yeah, she would know.
I will also give you a clue.
Okay. Yes, please.
Yeah. There is an old epic movie made about this guy starring Charlton Heston.
He's starring all of them. Okay. Moses.
Cortez.
Okay, Cortez. Cortez and Moses. Cool.
Yep. Those two.
Didn't he play like Moses in the Ten Commandments?
He did play Moses. You are correct about that.
That's literally the only thing I got going. Like, Charlton Heston was in that movie. That's an epic from the past. So
yeah.
IMDb helped me out there, but I'm sure I'm wrong.
So one of the things that's little known about Moses is that he was actually resurrected in medieval Spain.
I knew it.
Yeah.
I knew it.
Exactly.
So this guy, he is a little bit younger than Roland and Charlemagne. He was alive in the 1000s.
Okay.
But his name was Rodrigo Diaz de Vivar, more famously known as El Cid.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Now we got to do an El Cid podcast.
Oh, we will. We will.
All right. Because, hey, I've heard that. I know nothing. So
yeah.
We got to get deep into that. So we think that he was a big part of the other side, or maybe after.
He wouldn't, like I said, he wouldn't actually have fought Roland.
Sure.
Roland is he wasn't alive at that point.
Right.
But
see, the problem is he can only get halfway through a horse, mm-hmm. and until you can get all the way through one, allowed to fight.
He was just a baby. Babies can like get through like half a human max. Depends. Maybe you can get through another baby. So he came a little bit later. Was a unifying factor between Christians and Muslims.
He was. And on top of that, he has his own medieval epic poem associated with him as well.
El Cid.
Yeah. It's called The Song of the Cid.
The Song of the
Song
Cid.
Of the Sith?
Oh, man.
Song of the Cid. Yeah.
Sith?
Song of the Sith. Are you kidding me? We're getting into Star Wars next? Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Okay. Well, El Cid. So, hey. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to that now.
Yeah, seriously.
Okay, so the Song of Roland, very interesting. Thank you so much for all of the knowledge. We were had our butts handed to us in the pop quiz.
Yeah, seriously though,
that was a humbling. Again, I was riding high after the last couple of weeks. So
yeah, you were doing really good.
Firmly,
I've been failing across.
I've
the
been
board
firmly reaffixed line, so. To the earth after that one. I don't know as much as I thought. Neither of us do, Nick.
Nope.
That's why we have to continue to learn.
That's right.
But we really do appreciate. You guys listening and coming along this journey with us. Real quick, before we take off, I want to take care of some housekeeping. I want you guys to rate the show. If you could, go on to iTunes and leave a review. Subscribe if you'd like to have all of our episodes as they come out just automatically put onto your phone. It makes life really easy. But tell us how we're doing. Let us know if you really dig it. Let us know if there's anything we can be doing better for you, and we will always attempt to make this show better and better. And if you'd like to help us make that show better, there's something that you can do. You can help us out directly, and that's by visiting our Patreon page. There will be a link in the show notes to that. It's the Brothers Merv at the Patreon website. You guys can give per episode we do a one-time donation. Give us a dollar, give us $100. Anything that you give, Nick's laughing. He's like, who has that money? But I understand.
I was waiting for it. You can give us $1,000. I was waiting for you to keep going.
I thought about going higher and higher, but
If you want to send me to Spain so I can do the El Cid one on location, I'm happy to do that.
There is that. Yeah. Dylan's trying to go on location. Nick and I are looking for a place to visit and report back to you guys specifically.
Looking for somewhere in Kentucky.
Yeah.
Why?
Just and so that's
been to Kentucky.
Barely takes any money at all. But the point is, you guys, all the money that is given to us, we appreciate it. It's so helpful and it goes right back into the show. It helps us get equipment, great guests, helps send us places and helps us get these experts that come here and school us from week to week. Yep. So we really appreciate that, that support, you guys. It means a lot. Check us out on all our forms of social media, the Brothers Murph on Instagram, Brothers Murph on Twitter, Facebook. Like and subscribe to it all, you guys. And for this week, I have been Michael Lee Murphy.
I've been Nick Murphy.
I'm Dylan White.
And we are reminding you folks, imploring even, to stay curious.